Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
We have Chris Logan with me, and if this is your chance to learn anything and everything about virtual wholesaling, and I know I've just put a lot of pressure on Chris because there's going to be a lot to cover in 30, 40 minutes here, but you could learn how you could work with Chris and his team by going to virtualwholesalingmadesimple.com. It's a bit of a longer domain name, so if you go to the show notes, it's going to be clickable right there for everybody, but really appreciate your time, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. I appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to just sharing some value with your audience and getting people going to their first deal.
So Chris, you've shared this, I'm sure, a dozen times over. So we're going to kind of do a truncated version of your backstory.
Yeah.
Like you're a superhero in wholesaling. So we need your origin story. What led you to virtual wholesaling?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So when I first started in wholesaling, right, it was based on just where I was. I knew nothing really about roofing, and I wanted to get involved in it. I just read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad and went to a training. And when I went to this training event, it's like a 3-day event. They put all these strategies up on the board of how to get started in real estate. And the one strategy that really identified with the most was because I didn't have a lot of money to get started in real estate. I didn't have, you know, like a huge network or anything like that. And so when they drew wholesaling up on the board, I was like, man, that just makes sense. You can flip a piece of paper for tens of thousands of dollars. So I did it, took a class and a course and got rocking and rolling with it. It took us like 6 months to do our first deal. And we were just taking massive, immediate, imperfect action. And then 2 years before COVID happened, we actually made the decision to go virtual. So we were very blessed that we made that decision early. So when COVID happened, we really weren't caught off guard like most real estate investors were. Most wholesalers, they were struggling to do deals during that because they're used to meeting with sellers belly to belly, shaking hands and all that stuff. And sellers didn't want them to come in their house. So they're like, what do we do? And so COVID actually ended up being one of our best years that we've had in business. And so that's how we got started in virtual. And mainly it was out of necessity. My wife, all the acquisitions. So she was meeting with all the sellers in person and she was going into some real sketchy neighborhoods by herself. So I wasn't really a fan of that. And then she was going on 15 appointments a week and she'd always come home exhausted. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way. So at that point, we were already closing some deals over the phone. So we're like, all right, why don't we just go 100%? So we gradually bumped it up. We did 50-50, then 75-25, then 100% over the
phone. Sure. So was that the scenario there? You were taking the phone calls and sending her out?
Yeah. So pretty much how we split it up was she was doing acquisitions, so talking with the sellers, and then I was overseeing dispositions and marketing. So I was working with the buyers, she was working with the sellers, and then I was doing all the marketing campaigns. And sure. So that was when we were really small. And then from there, we grew and we started adding people to our team. And then at one point, we've had over 35 people on our team. We've since slimmed it back a lot because our new mentality is like, keep it small, keep it all type thing, right? And we've realized that scaling isn't as glossy as a lot of people make it out to be. And so we just realized the size of company that we have now is exactly what we want, right? But yeah, so we just really wanted to be pulled out of the day-to-day and we wanted to be able to grow and do more deals. And one of the things that virtual allowed us to do was it allowed us to stop driving back and forth the properties. And then that way we could take that time and directly put it into making calls and talking with sellers.
So I wanted to start at the beginning here. It says you said it took you 6 months mm-hmm. to get your first deal.
Yeah.
What, I mean, 6 months is quite a bit of time. What type of mindset or what made you to decide to stick with it?
Yeah.
For that first 6 months to make sure you found success here?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. The main was that I was determined to do a deal. I didn't care what it took. I was determined to do a deal. I was working a 9-to-5. I was in corporate America, sitting in a cubicle most days. And I just knew that life wasn't for me. And I was meant for more and to do more things. Like, and I just really wanted to have financial freedom. Like I saw the guys on TV who were in real estate, and like I heard so many other people who were in real estate, I wanted to do that. And I wanted more freedom to be home with my family. I wanted to be able to travel if I want to travel, take days off. I wanted to do that. And I wanted to, you know, have my own, it'd be basically. And so that was the big reason and my big motivation behind that. And really to provide a better lifestyle and a legacy too, because knowledge is something you can transfer from generation to generation, and it just goes on. And it's amazing what it can impact starting with one person and what can happen with that.
Yeah. This is one of those core beliefs that I have, is that the fact that we typically will respond to pain, right?
Yeah.
We'll react, or we'll get on the defense when we have to. Mm-hmm. But until you identify a strong enough why to get off your butt, you're kind of stagnant.
100%. And I think that's a big mistake that a lot of new wholesalers make when they get in. All they look at is money, and they're like, oh, I'm going to make all this money. That's great, right? But when the money doesn't come in the first 30 days, 60, 90 days, they're like, maybe this isn't for me. And that's not the case at all. It's just they didn't have a big enough why behind it, like you said, right? So if they have a big enough why, the best way to be able to push through the garbage of the process and the pain of the process is having a bigger why than the pain. So if you can do that, you can push through anything. So,
well, I'd be curious. It took you 6 months to get the first deal. Mm-hmm. How quickly did the second deal come?
So that's interesting. So the second deal actually came very shortly right after the first deal. And I've heard that from a lot of people. So I've asked around and wanted to find out if other people had a similar journey. And everyone tells you, man, that first deal is crazy, right? But once you get that first deal, the second deal almost happens immediately. And the reason why I think that is because you're putting in this hustle, right? You're talking to so many sellers, and that seller who wasn't ready to sell 6 months ago or 3 months ago or 4 months ago, they call you just out of the blue. They text you, or you call them back for just one more time to see if you can get them, right? And they say, you know what? I think I am interested in selling. And you're like, all right. Mm-hmm. So that's really why I think it happens. I just think it's a result of follow-up. And the thing that people have to understand is that wholesaling is a contact sport, right? So the more contacts you make, the more contracts you'll get. So if you talk to one person a week, I mean, it's going to take you 10 years to do a deal, right? But mm-hmm. if you say, look, I'm going to devote consistent time, you know, 2-3 hours a day, every single day to building this business, and you treat it like a hobby, you can have massive success if you just commit the time every single day, because that compounds and builds until you have this amazing result. And that happens when you put in enough time, energy, and hustle into it.
Right. You know, I don't want to call it a myth, but I do want to point to the fact that I think some experts in this area kind mm-hmm. of push this under the rug a little bit, the amount of effort it mm-hmm. actually takes. It's not easy money as sometimes it's billed.
100%. Yeah, there's been a lot of programs out there that pitch wholesaling, like you push a button and money falls from the sky and all that, or you just mm-hmm. have to talk to a couple sellers a week and bam, you know? And I think that's also responsible for many people not succeeding in it. It's because they have this vision in their mind of how easy it's supposed to be. And the thing is they don't stop believing the process. They just stop believing that they can do it. And that's bad, because most of the time it's not their fault. If they have a strong enough why, right? And they've kind of bought into this whole 1 hour a week thing, right? It can like sabotage their journey. So they quit before they even start, if that makes sense. So no, mm-hmm. I totally agree with that 100%. And that's one of the reasons why I very transparent people on how long it takes them to do their first deal. And really, I tell people also that you have to fall in love with the journey. Don't focus on getting money. Money will come, right? Money's a byproduct of consistent energy and effort, right? But if you focus on the journey and just loving the journey and just want to master and learn every single part of it, that's where the magic happens, because you start having fun, and then you start committing to the long game. And that's what it's all about, because no matter what you do, it takes time. A lot of people are like, okay, wholesaling is too hard, so I'm going to go to creative finance. I see this guy saying I can get a deal in 30 days, right? So I'm going to try creative finance. And they're like, oh no, that's taking me too long to get a deal. So I'm going to do rehabbing, right? Or they want to do all these strategies, but they've stopped and started so many different times. Like if they would have just packed all that time into just focusing on one thing, man, they could have gotten a result much faster.
Well, there's a couple of things that you pointed out here that I wanted to dive into, but before we do here, you know, we talked about that second deal coming a lot quicker, and you're absolutely right. The amount of volume kind of catches up and it starts to snowball. Do you think, focus on mindset for a second. Do you think that there is a possibility that when you get that first deal under your belt, like a switch happens where you finally believe that, holy crap, this is actually possible?
Yeah, totally. I think that's another thing that people don't talk about enough. So yeah, because when you're trying to get your first deal, you're in what I like to call the valley of belief, right? So you're in the valley, you're working hard and you're pushing, and you're not sure if it works, but you're just taking the guy's word for it that told you it works. And you're kind of borrowing that belief in that valley of belief there. But when you first do your first deal, and you see that money hit your bank account, holding that check, you're like, yes, it works. So you no longer have to borrow someone's belief anymore. You have your own belief. And I truly believe that comes through in conversations. So maybe a seller that you couldn't get to move forward before, now you're in the right mindset to make it happen. And maybe that's why the second deal comes. That's a really good point. I think that's 100% another reason why the second deal comes easier. And then the third deal, and then the fourth, and so on. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, one of those things that I think we did quite well when we started wholesaling or deciding that we're going to do this type of thing is that we actually had a list of actionable activities that we had to do every single day.
Yeah.
And that is including how many people we were going to talk to. And at the end of the day, I had to show that I scored 100 points every single day.
I love that.
Just so that holding each other accountable, and focusing on those things. I can't tell you how many times I've run into people who get into real estate investing and they say, I still haven't gotten my first deal. And I say, well, can you break down what you've done today? And they've spent time working on their logo, or they spent time working on their business card, or they're busy, but they're not doing the cash generating deals that they need to be doing.
100%. That's why, like in real estate, when you're first getting started in wholesaling, you need to start with the cheapest CRM you can get, right? Like 19, 20 bucks a month, maybe even a yellow pad or something like that, just to start, because there's no distractions. When you start diving into these complicated CRMs, all these automations and workflows and getting started, that there's a time and a place for that, and you will need that. But when you're trying to get your first deal, you don't need that. You need to focus solely on putting revenue in first position, right? How can I make money today? All right. Or put an activity today that can help me make money tomorrow. And, you know, just focusing on blocking off specific amounts of time so you don't get distracted with all the social media. It's incredibly hard, but no, I love that. And, you know, time blocking was a really big part of my strategy. I actually had one of my sales managers from a previous company I used to work for before I got out of corporate America. He helped me organize my time and schedule. And I didn't have a point system like that. I love that. Sounds very simple. But he showed me how to block off time in my calendar and say, look, come heck or high water, like you do this activity and you don't do anything else during this time. You literally turn your phone off or you put distractions aside and you just focus. And we live in a very distracted time today. So I definitely feel like people need that.
You know, one of those things that you're talking about, a simple CRM, one of those simple CRMs that I've seen that worked great for this guy was he simply had a 31-day folder. Have you seen those? Like an accordion folder?
And
he would take a piece of paper, you know, just a simple piece of paper, make notes down for the call. If he had to follow up, he'd advance it in that folder. So every day he would just pull what is out for that particular day.
Love that.
He would just advance it and just rotate 31 days. It worked great for him. That's what he used.
I think people overcomplicate things a lot, you know, and part of that problem is ads on Facebook and all this, you know, all these advertising that people are just getting bombarded with, right? And people don't know how to like identify if it's something they need or they don't need, right? This is why when a lot of people are like, oh, I'm just going to go learn wholesaling for free. I'm not going to invest in a coach or anything like that. I'm just going to learn on my own. People get so distracted and they run in like 100 different directions and then they exhaust themselves and they're like, all right, I've wasted time, energy, and effort here. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I do need some direction. So just keeping it simple is so key in the beginning, you know, just things like that. I mean, I think when we first started out, we had an Excel, like that's all it was. We had an Excel file. And eventually you need to upgrade from the Excel when you get enough leads, but it worked. Just keeping it simple is where it's at.
Yeah. We had the same situation. We started with a Google Drive Excel file and eventually it just gets overwhelming, but that's all you really need when you get going.
100%.
So this has been a great conversation so far, Chris. And I just want to point everybody one more time to virtualwholesalingmadesimple.com for more information about what Chris and his team are up to. Do us a quick favor. If you found some value in what we're talking about so far, please share this episode with one of your wholesaling enthusiast friends. And then if you're watching this on YouTube, we're going to also ask you for a like and a subscribe. Chris, now that we're going to get into the nitty-gritty here and some actionable things that people can actually do here, especially if they're starting in wholesaling. First of all, how do you pick your market when you're doing virtual wholesaling? That's the first thing to ask.
Yeah, this is a top question that I get asked from a lot of people because it was a question that I had when I first got started, right? I was like, okay, great. I'm in this area. How do I know where to go? Right. So as wholesalers, the most important thing is it doesn't matter where we want to start. It matters where the buyers are buying, right? Because buyers are how we make our money as a wholesaler. If we don't have buyers, we don't have money. So everyone that says you need to find a good deal to sell itself, totally wrong. Got to have a buyer first and then find what they want and then bring them what they want, right? So knowing that, what we want to do is we want to find areas that are popular, people are moving to, and there's enough people there where we can get deals done. So very simple. You can use a free tool, Google, right? So there's steps that we use to pick a market. So first thing you want to do is you want to go to Google and you want to look up so the area that you're going into, okay? And what we have found is the ideal population size and the first check mark for a great territory is 250,000 people. Because what I've found is if you go below 250,000 people, you start getting into more of like a rural type of area. And those types of areas, you don't have any problem locking up deals or getting sellers to say yes, right? But you will have a big problem finding buyers there, right? So easier to get deals, harder to sell deals in areas that are less than 250,000. So that's why we focus on a population size of 250,000. So you can literally go to Google, type in whatever county you're looking for and say population size, and it'll tell you how many. And if it says 250,000, that's your first check mark. The second thing we look for is if you go to Google again and you want to look for the median home price in that area. So what is the median home price? So if you have a timeline, if you picture a timeline in your mind, right? And on the left-hand side, you have the cheap houses that are like $50,000. And on the far right, you have the opposite extreme, which is like multi-million dollar homes. The one in the middle, okay, the median home price or the middle home price, that's the most common type of property being sold. And it's the house that everybody wants. So what you want to do is you want to type that same county, right, into Google, and you want to type in median home price and then whatever the county is. Scroll down, you're going to click a Zillow link there. And when you pull that Zillow link up, as long as that says a minimum of $200,000, then you're good to go. That's check mark number two. So we look for 250,000 population, 200,000 median home price. So if you have that, then that is the making right there of a solid territory for you to start. And what you're going to find is these areas that have this combination are typically major metro areas. These are great because there's a lot of people living in those areas. You have a lot of people moving to those areas and there's high demand. So you're never going to have a problem selling your deals.
Much like you had said earlier, I would imagine, you know, when it comes to finding your real estate investing niche, and you talked about focus, is it good to focus on specific areas then? If you find that one area, that's where your efforts should be for at least at first?
100%. Big mistake that people make when they go virtual is they get overwhelmed because they're like, oh my gosh, these guys are talking about nationwide wholesaling. You know, I have to go all over the United States. Like, that's super overwhelming. How do I find buyers in all the states, right? How do I do that? So we clear that clutter aside and we say, hey, focus on one territory at a time, right? You want to focus on one territory, pull 4 to 6 zip codes, right, from that area, and then do your marketing. And then once you do your marketing, you can see if you start getting leads and the types of houses that you want. And once you see that you get that, then the next step is to ramp it up there, right? So I recommend focusing on one territory and not moving on or adding another territory until you've pulled all the lists in that territory and there's no other homeowners left to pull, right?
Well, you brought up marketing. How do you market to these people, especially when you're first starting out?
Sure. So a big shift for us when we first started scaling up virtual is we changed the way we approach our marketing. At one point, we were sending out a ton of mail. Mail can be great, but it has really high overhead. And we were sending out like 30,000 pieces a month, right? So a big shift for us was when we switched 100% to cold calling. Cold calling, a lot of people are like, oh, it doesn't work. It works. So when we started doing it, I was like, this is something, you know how we talked about the journey before and really just falling in love with the process and mastering your craft. That's what I wanted to do with cold calling. So I was like, I'm going to make calls myself first. I'm going to get deals. And after 90 days, I'm going to start hiring virtual assistants to make the calls for me, right? So we started out with me making the calls. After I got some deals, I hired some VAs to start bringing in deals. In our top month, we had like 25 houses under contract, all from cold call. And so that's the way that we approach our marketing is we cold call. And what we have found is that cold calling is the fastest way to reach sellers because you're not passively waiting for these people to call you, like spray and pray marketing. You're putting it out there and praying that they call. You know, you're making quick outreach to these sellers and you're finding out if they're interested in selling yes or no. And in the most competitive market that we've had in the last 10 years in 2021, we were getting leads at $67 a piece. So cold calling's been our claim to fame and it's been something we've scaled. We have a call center over in Bangladesh and with a bunch of guys making calls and we put my top virtual assistant, we put him as the call center manager and that's what drives leads for our business. And that's what I recommend for everybody getting started.
So how are you finding the skip tracing information then in order to just these cold calling?
Yeah. So we use a friend of mine's company. They're called Lead Fusion. Actually give you a link here that gives your audience a discount just for, since we're being on the podcast today, they can get 6 cents skip tracing on there. And I've compared him against the top 10 companies that are out there. And for the price you pay and the accuracy, it's 100% like the best service to use. So that's what we use.
I'm often asked if people could have a script. And I think that's really funny that we focus so much on scripts associated with real estate and how we should talk to people. Mm-hmm. But do you have a way that you found that works best when you start off? You're just randomly calling these people.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah. So when we call these homeowners, what we do is I want to come off as like a Joe home buyer next door type of guy, right? I don't want to come off as like a big company and sound all crazy professional. I just want to make a call like I'm just picking up my phone and gonna call these people, right? So what I do is I say, hey, you know, I hope I have the right phone number. And the reason I say that, nobody says that. Maybe they will after this podcast. But the reason I say that is because people don't like knowing that their information is out there. We live in a state of like false denial, right? Where they don't want to, they know their information out there, but they still don't want to believe it, right? And so mm-hmm. I say, I hope I have the right phone number, even though I know I have the right phone number, to kind of put them at ease and drop the guard immediately. And it works so well, right? So I say, hey, I hope I have the right phone number. Is this John? It's like, yeah, this is John. Who's this? Hey, John, my name's Chris. I know that you don't know me or anything like that, but I came across your property off of 123 Main Street. I bought a few houses in the area there and just want to see if you consider a cash offer for your property there. Boom. And if you do that in 7 seconds, you have 7 seconds to capture the seller's attention. And if you don't capture their attention in 7 seconds, they'll hang up on you. So you just want to state who you are, why you're calling, and how you can help them. And at that point, they're either going to say yes or no. If they say yes, then you can say, great. You know, how much you're hoping to get for your property, or you can kind of lead in with telling them the type of offer that you're going to be making. Okay, well, I make the type of offer that I'm going to be making is a cash offer, right? So you wouldn't be responsible for any realtor fees or commissions or anything like that. The great thing is I can take the property in as is condition. And so you're not going to have to worry about fixing anything up, or I'm not going to have make you pay for anything for closing. So if I was going to make you an offer like that, what do you think you'd accept? And then he's going to tell you, we always want them to get us tell us what they would accept for the property. And sometimes they like to play games. They're like, oh, you called me. Why don't you tell me what your number is? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, I can do that. I just need to know a little bit more about the property. And so then you want to ask some things. And one of the things that you want to do is you want to get the four pillars of motivation. Okay. Most people miss this. And it's the reason why cold calling doesn't work for them. So cool if I go into that?
Absolutely.
All right, great. So the four pillars of motivation. So what you have is you have the asking price, right? The first thing is the asking price. The second thing is you have the timeline. The third thing is you have the motivation and then the condition. So let me break these down for a second. So the asking price, what we have typically found, if people are asking a price that is within 80% of the Zillow's estimate, so you want to pull the property up on Zillow, right? 80% of that number, if they're within 10 grand of that, then that's the first check of motivation right there. That's the first sign a seller's motivated, because if they're already asking a discounted price, chances are they'll go even lower, right? So that's check mark number one, right? The second thing is timeline. When are they looking to sell, right? What we have found, the sellers that are ready to sell like right now, the ones that you don't have to convince or anything like that, which you should never do, by the way, we have found that the sellers who want to sell within 90 days or less, those are the ones that's hot opportunity. So if you can get a seller who's asking within 10% of 80% of his estimate, I'll give an example of that. If the seller wants 80 to 90,000, that's check mark number one, right? So if they are willing to sell within 90 days, that is a smoking hot lead. And we have found it takes only 10 of those leads to get a contract, right? So when you get one of those, you want to work those really hard, right? So the next part is the condition, right? So the condition of the property, you want to find out if they've remodeled the kitchen or bathrooms in the last 5 years. So that way it kind of gives you an idea of the condition, any major repairs. You want to do the major things like roof, electric, AC, plumbing, any issues there, right? So that'll give you plenty of an idea of the condition of the property. And then the last one, the one you need to spend the most amount of time on, which is what most wholesalers breeze over and they don't spend time on, is the why. Right? The motivation. Why are you thinking about selling? How long have you been thinking about selling? Right? And really digging into that and spending the most of the time there, because the seller is going to give you the ammo right there that you need to push on some pain points and make them understand that selling right now is a good thing. That they're going to tell you what they want you to, they're going to tell you the problem that they want you to solve so they can say yes to you. And it's only if you ask deeper questions there.
Just a minute ago, you mentioned that you shouldn't try to convince. Mm-hmm. Could you explain why?
Yeah, sure. So what we have found is that if you try to convince a seller to say they're pretty, number one, it's not going to be the seller that you're going to work with.
I'm sorry, Chris, could you start that over again? Because we kind of blipped out there for a second.
Sure.
So
sure.
Where you blipped out was just before I asked you, could you tell everybody why you wouldn't try to convince
sell a homeowner?
Somebody?
Yes. Yeah. So here's the thing. So the main reason is if you're trying to sell a homeowner on why they should work with you, then it's not the right homeowner to work with. You're not going to get the right price for the property. It's not going to be a price you could ever make work in this lifetime. And then number two, the seller, it's just, there's no motivation there. You're like convincing them and everything like that. And it's going to make them push away. So when you lean in, they kind of pull away. Right? They're like, man, this guy really wants my house. Why? Maybe I should get an appraisal. Maybe I should list it with a realtor, right? Something like that. So you want to focus not on selling, because this actually is not sales at all. It's actually sales in reverse. These sellers are telling you they have a problem and we're seeing if it's going to be a good fit for us and something we can move forward. So if you take that posture in thinking like, I don't need this house, I'm just simply qualifying the seller to see if it's going to be a good opportunity for me, your whole mindset shifts. You don't have commission breath, right? You're not desperate and you're solely focusing on, can I make something work here or not? And if you can't make something work, that's okay. You don't have to get, and you don't want to get, every single seller. So that's the reason we have found that you don't want to do that, because you fall into this pattern of chasing, right? And you'll never get deals when you're chasing sellers, ever.
I can't echo that enough. We've learned that time and time again. In fact, buyer's remorse is one of the worst things that you can be dealing with, or seller's remorse. Yeah. Talking about buyers, though, talk a little bit. I've found, at least, and you can maybe echo this if I'm correct, I found that this is something that a lot of people don't focus on. And I find that I have to spend as much time building my buyer's list as I am trying to find my next property.
100%. So most wholesalers don't do that, right? So that's very smart of you that you're doing that. Most wholesalers focus all their time, energy, and effort on marketing for sellers, because there's a lot of bad information out there. A lot of coaches are like, if you find a good deal, it'll sell itself. But you know what? Most new wholesalers have no idea what a good deal even looks like. So how's it going to sell itself, right? How do they know it's a deal? They don't, right? So that being the case, what they want to do, and this applies to even the seasoned guys. So if you're seasoned and you're watching this and you're like, is this just going to work for new wholesalers? Does it work for, I've been doing this for a long time. What value can I get out of it? Stay listening, because I got something for you here, right? So, but what you want to do is you want to grow your buyer's list first. You want to find out what your buyers want. So find your buyer first, right? You want to find out what your buyers want. They will tell you. And then you need to go out and market and find exactly what they want and then bring it to them. Once you do that, the whole process becomes a lot easier. When I first started, I was locking up deals. I had no buyers in sight. And man, let me tell you, I was like, it was stressful the entire time. Such an unnecessary amount of stress. I had no idea how I was going to get buyers. And it's unfair to the homeowners, right? And I dropped some contracts in the beginning because I didn't have my buyer's situation all sorted out, right? So you need to be marketing for buyers as much, if not harder, than you do sellers. So the fastest way to get buyers, so I'm going to give you an actionable tip you can do right now to get buyers. So one of the best ways in a new territory, so if you're like, Chris, I'm virtual, I want to do virtual, but how do I build buyers list in another state or in my same state far away? How do I do it, or just build a buyer's list in general? One of the easiest things you can do is, once you pick a territory, go in and join all the Facebook groups for that territory that you're in, right? So if you're in Florida, right? And let's say you're going to focus on Hillsborough County. I'll just give an example. That's Tampa, right? You want to join all the Facebook groups for the Tampa Bay area. And then you also want to join the state groups, right? Like Florida. And then what you want to do there is you want to go into that group and you want to pull up all the sale posts of properties that have, like, wholesalers that have tried to sell properties. And once you go into the comments section, you're going to see a string of people commenting, says, send me more info. I'm a buyer. Send me more info. I'm a buyer. Send me more info, right? You're going to take those down and you're going to reach out to them on Facebook and through email, whichever you have the ability to do, right? And you're going to open a conversation with them. Hey, I saw that you were interested in a property off of 123 Main Street over there. Was that like a one-off purchase for you, or are you still actively buying? Like, no, I'm still actively buying. Great. Where are you buying? Oh, I'm buying all in this area. Okay, great. So you're a cash buyer. You're not a wholesaler, realtor. Yes, I'm a cash buyer. Okay, great. And then add them to your list. Get their phone number and email, right? And then what you also want to do is, if another big myth is, people will say, coaches will say, oh, you know, you can't, you know, you want to avoid putting wholesalers on your list. You only want cash buyers. That is so dead wrong. It's ridiculous, right? Because other wholesalers are not your competition. They are your partners to collaborate with, right? They can bring you buyers that you don't even have access to and you'll never get access to. Maybe it's a good friend of theirs. Maybe it's a contractor they know that wants to buy properties and will pay more than anybody else. So I firmly believe you need to have three types of contacts on your buyers list. You need to have cash buyers, of course, wholesalers, and realtors, right? So then if someone says they're a wholesaler, fantastic. Let them know you'd like to get their contact information, their email, and you'll go ahead and add them to your list. And then if they say they're a realtor, add them to your list as well. We have realtors that bring buyers for our deals that are out of the country. I would never contact these guys, right? So if anyone here listening is wondering how these companies sell 10, 15, 20, 30 deals a month, how do you do it, right? Even 5 deals a month consistently, even 1 deal a month consistently. You do it by getting enough eyeballs on your deal, right? The more eyeballs that you have on your deal, the more chance that you are going to be able to sell that. And if you focus 1 hour a day and add five of these types of contacts to your list every day, okay, it's a combination of either a cash buyer, wholesaler, realtor, just five contacts a day. By the end of the year, you will have around 1,200 contacts on your buyer's list, and you'll be able to pretty much sell anything.
No, that's a great tip and strategy. Really appreciate you giving us all of that information, Chris.
Yeah.
And before we move into the rapid fire questions, I do have one more question for you.
Sure.
Earlier, you mentioned that you used a guru yourself. You used some expertise yourself, and you hired somebody to for some training. Can you tell me how that impacted your business? Just and how you made the decision that that was an investment versus an expense.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So when we made the decision, because we invested a good deal of money to get started in coaching. So we did two things. We did a 3-day event and then we hired a coach, right? So we invested a good deal of money in the 3-day event. I want to say the 3-day event was like $6,000 or something like that, right? And I thought to myself, hey, if I'm going to be investing this type of money into learning this strategy, then I want to have the highest chance of success possible. Like if I'm going to be spending this type of money, like I want to know I'm going to be successful and be to give it my best shot so I could say, hey, I tried everything, right? And so we had the opportunity to work with one of the coaches from the people that put on the event. And that was an additional investment that we had to make. And I'm telling you, had I not made that investment, I wouldn't be where I would be, because people have to value, people look at education and they say it's expensive. Then what they do is they go out and try to do it. They get lucky. They put a couple of deals under contract. They drop those deals because they get to an advanced situation they don't know how to handle. They have no one to ask. And those two deals could have been $20, right? And maybe their coaching they were looking at was like $6,000 or $7,000. And they're like, oh no, it's too expensive. So here's the thing. Instead of asking, how much does something cost? Say, what will it cost me if I don't? And if you could think about education in terms of that, then it's going to help you make better decisions, because there's a huge opportunity cost of not knowing what to do and making the wrong decisions and dropping deals versus investing a little bit up front, having the confidence to know what to do, get those deals across the finish line and move forward. In most cases, you can pay off your coaching after one deal. So, I mean, I'm a big believer in coaches. I have two coaches myself right now, and I have coaches for multiple different areas of my life. So when I saw that and how it worked for me, I was like, man, like, because you're buying time is what you're doing, right? We have limited time. Mm-hmm. And if you can truly understand that, then you know that a coach, you know, you're paying to avoid the mistakes somebody else went through. So it's like a show. So it's like a hack on time, so you can get more done without out on your own. So if I can have a shortcut and, you know, borrow somebody else's experience so I can get to where I want to go faster, I'm all for it.
Yeah. So Chris, you're just echoing the tagline of the show. It's one of is that you can either put in the time and create that 10,000 hours of experience or rely on somebody who's already made that investment.
100%.
And it's definitely worthwhile. With that, I'm going to remind everybody one more time, virtualwholesalingmadesimple.com. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes again. But Chris, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate all of the value, tips, and strategies people can implement today in their wholesaling business. But before I let you go, are you ready for the rapid fire?
Bring it on.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
That they can't do it, or that they don't have the money. And if they had the money and they had the connections, they could be successful.
Do you have a book recommendation, or what are you reading right now?
Mm-hmm. So a book recommendation that I recommend for everybody in real estate is actually this one right here, The One Thing by Gary Keller. He's the founder of Keller Williams, one of the largest brokerages in the country. And real estate brokers in the country. And the whole point of this book, this is simplifying down to one thing. So many investors focus on like 5-10 different things, and they use up all their energy running like crazy in all directions. This book will show you how to focus, and it'll help you focus on the daily activities you can do, the most important ones, so you can get the momentum that you truly desire.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Start sooner.
That's the number one response I get.
Yeah.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented in your business that has had the biggest time-saving impact?
That's a good one. You know what? I'll tell you. Virtual assistants. So once we learned how to do something, we trained somebody else to do it, put them in place, and now I can leverage their time. So I'm limited by my own 24 hours if I'm just relying on me. But when you put other people in place, you're now leveraging their time and you can really grow that. And there's an unlimited amount of time you can put in, which takes your results and can just explode them, right? So other people's leverage, the leverage of other people's time, money, and resources.
Well, Chris, is there a question or concept you wished we would have had time for to cover here today?
I think we've pretty much covered, we dove pretty deep. I think we pretty much covered it all. But of course, if there's any questions that anybody has, right? Like maybe you were listening to something today and you're like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. And I want to learn a little bit more about that, right? Then again, you can go to virtualwholesalingmadesimple.com. You can fill out an application. You really detail in your responses. I don't take on everybody. And if we like what you have to say, we'll consider bringing you on as a client. You can also connect with me on Facebook as well, Chris Logan REI.
Well, Chris, really appreciate it again. I hope you'll consider coming back again sometime. We covered a lot of ground in 40 minutes, but thanks again. Great to meet you.
Oh, yeah, thanks. It was great meeting you too, Jack, and had a blast on the show, and I'll look forward to coming back again sometime.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.